It's probably too much to call it a recurring nightmare, but it is a nightmare I had more than once, which perhaps qualifies. I had it a lot more earlier in life, and the most vivid version I remember like this. I am first all of a sudden aware of being backstage. It is dark. I realize, with mounting horror, that I'm in the midst of a play, that I'm about to go on stage, which would be enough, but then I look at my costume, and I'm in an elaborate kimono with a bead-encrusted, festooned headdress and bright-colored makeup all across my face. I am in full regalia for traditional Chinese opera. The terror is fully descended now. I do not know traditional Chinese opera at all, much less this particular opera, which is happening all around me. The timeless fear inside these dreams, of course, is that I'm somehow not enough, that I am imperfect and unprepared. But for so much of life, especially so much that truly matters, we are never quite prepared, never quite perfect. We leap into the unknown. We stretch for what is just out of our reach. We believe in our capacity yet unproven. This is a bit of a poem called Transcendental Etude by Adrienne Rich. She writes, "No one ever told us that we had to study our lives, make of our lives a study as if learning natural history, that we should begin with the simple exercises first and slowly go on to trying the hard ones, practicing till strength and accuracy become one with the daring to leap into transcendence, take the chance of breaking down the wild arpeggio or faulting the full sentence of the fugue. And in fact, we can't live like that. We take on everything all at once before we've begun to read or mark time. We're forced to begin in the midst of the hard movement, the one already sounding as we are born. At most, we're allowed a few months of simply listening to the simple line of a woman's voice singing a child against her heart. Everything else is too soon. Everything else seems beyond us. We aren't ready for it. Nothing that was said is true. Caught naked in the argument, the counterpoint. But there come times, perhaps this is one of them, when we have to take ourselves more seriously or die. When we have to pull back from the incantations, the rhythms we've moved to thoughtlessly, and disenthrall ourselves, bestow ourselves to silence or a severer listening, cleansed of oratory, formulas, choruses, laments, static crowning the wires. There come times, perhaps this is one of them, when we have to take ourselves more seriously, bestow ourselves to silence. Perhaps this is one of them. This is a time for listening. This is a time for the prophetic within us. This month, our theme is prophecy. And one of my favorite things about the prophets in the Bible is that they are each utterly unqualified and imperfect and unprepared. They are thrust into their role most unwillingly and almost always with some trepidation. There are a number of prophets in the Bible, as many of you know. Isaiah is one of the most famous, and I love this account from chapter 6 of the book by his name. It's a part he explains his moment of call, his revelation, and his reticent reception. He says, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. And above him were seraphim, each with six wings, two wings covering their faces, two covering their feet, and with the two others they were flying. And they called to one another, saying, "Holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, the whole earth is full of his glory." And I said, "Woe to me, I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among people of unclean lips. My eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." And then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar, and with it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin is atoned for." And then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am. Send me." And then he explains, the Lord does his assignment, and at the very end, Isaiah says, "Then I said, 'For how long, Lord?'" I love the image of this reluctant prophet saying that he was unclean already in the face of this enormous vision, and then the angel purifying him with the coal, which couldn't possibly be more intense. Those of you who were here last week in a New Year's ritual, we burned things in the flames for the new year and flash paper, and we thought we would embody this same passage by passing out flash paper and having you put it on the tip of your tongue. But we decided that that would be a little too much. This is intense. But at the very end are two of my favorite passages, hearing the voice say, "Whom shall I send?" And he says, "Here I am. Send me." But what follows I also love. After this huge revelation, super dramatic, six-winged angels, lips purified by coal, at the very end he says, and just how long is this going to be for? Because I have some flexibility in January, but my February is looking crazy. Isaiah, of course, does say yes. He embraces this inconvenient role of prophet. One of the precious challenges of Unitarian Universalism is that we are each called in ways to be prophets. We are each called to listen to the voice of our truth speaking. Whatever your theology, if you're walking the path of a theist, to listen to the voice of the holy as you know it, to slow down, to quiet, to ask deepening questions, to listen for the call within you. And if you are an atheist, still to listen to the call within you, to dig down to the deepest truth that you can find, the clearest purpose within you. For whatever your path, whatever your practice, there is some singular something straining to be born into this waiting world, especially now. Especially in this moment that we're sharing, we need every bit of prophet, every bit of truth within us. Just a few days ago, there was a beautiful art show up in Dover at the Wrong Brain Art Space, called This Is What Trans Looks Like. It was a collection of works from transgender artists. It was beautiful and a testament to the same spirit of "Here I am." And it reminded me of the story of Surat Shan Kanan, a founder of a group called Rainbow Jews. They write, "I identify as non-binary transmasculine. Being trans and Jewish seemed a complete oxymoron to me. I thought, I can't be. I have to decide between them. But I had this wonderful community that gave me all the space and all the time to come out. Years ago, they say, I went to the Western Wall. And there are three sections. There's a male section and a female section and an ungendered section. Now, I would probably go to the ungendered section, but it was my first time presenting as a male in such a holy place, and I went to the male section of the wall. It made me so happy to do that, to go to the part of the wall I wanted to, I was transitioning medically and spiritually, and it was one of the most important moments of my life. I say a Jewish online magazine reported on it, and it sparked online. I got really abusive messages. I thought, these people don't know me. I don't think anyone should be able to tell you who you are and how to live your life. Yourself is yourself, even in religious community. For me, this kind of prophetic presence is powerful, both as a rising up, as an authenticity, and as a blessing. The story of Canaan at the wall became a beacon for other trans Jews, for all people who strive for truth and becoming. They opened a door. Mae Sarton writes, "Now I become myself. It's taken time, many years and places. I have been dissolved and shaken, worn other people's faces, run madly as if time were there, terribly old, crying a warning, 'Hurry, you'll be dead before.' What? Before you reach morning? Or the end of the poem is clear? Or love safe in a walled city? Now to stand, to be here, feel my own weight and density. The black shadow on the paper is my hand, the shadow of a word. As thought shapes the shaper, falls heavily on the page, is heard, all fuses now into place, from wish to action, word to silence, my work, my love, my time, my face, gathered into one intense gesture of growing like a plant. As slowly as the ripening fruit, fertile, detached, is always spent, falls but does not exhaust the root, so all the poem is can give, made so, rooted by love. Now there is time, and time is young. Oh, in this single hour I live, all of myself, and do not move. I, the pursued, who madly ran, stand still, and stop the sun. Right here. Feel the full weight, the full density of this moment and this life, this truth within you and around you, the truth of your being, the truth of this moment. Rooted by love, we live all of ourselves, and we do not move. We take in all of it, work and love and time. We gather it all into this one growing, and from here we see. From here we rise. From here we wake to this world around us, especially now, this world calling out to us. In 1943, in the wake of the violence in Detroit, Mae Sarton wrote this poem, a reaction to the moment, to the racial tension, to the violence and destruction in which she lives. She writes, "Who wakes? Who wakes now who lay blind with sleep? Who starts bright-eyed with anger from his bed? I do. I, the plain citizen, cannot sleep. I hold the torturing fire in my head. I, an American, call the dead Negro's name, and in the hot dark of the city night, I walk the streets alone and sweat with shame. Too late to rise, to raise the dead, too late. This is the harvest, the seeds sown long ago. The careless word, the sly thought, excusing glance. I reap now everything I let pass, let go. This is the harvest of my own indifference. I, the plain citizen, have grown disorder in my own world. It is not what I meant, but dreams and images are potent and can murder. I stand accused of them. I am not innocent, Can I now plant imagination, honesty, and love where violence and terror abound? The poet prophet calls us to unflinching presence. They call us to truth and to action. Sartan's poem so long ago could have been written right now. We wake here and now to this day, to our lives, to this nation, to our families. We wake to the circumstance that we have created together, and we wake to a new way. We wake to a path of love, to a path of intentionality and mindfulness and truth, unflinching, wide open truth. We wake to a path of connectedness and hope, and it is beautiful. Amen.